Hello.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Hello.
Who's today? Yes, hello, how are you?
Work niggas, we was gods first. Some backpack rappers, now we rock purse. Maybe your stars curse, or we the gods with earth. I'm never compromising what my art is worth. I rock a verse, never worry what the rest right. My worst day still better than they best night. My wordplay like the vibes when they mesh right. I call it out of work cause the sex right. I'm in the band's right hand, hold a red stripe. Left hand, took a split, this is lit, this is it. What? My can't blow, bring your neck. Luchini folding like a Fetty at a ticker tape. I can demonstrate how to liquidate, let me set you straight. You got it, but I got a better interest rate. I reminisce on booking shows, trying to rent a space. To racking up these miles on the interstate. Getting cake, any cake, pound cake, yellow cake, double stuffed fudge, I get.
Okay, folks, we're back, and that was Trom Diggs, my friend out of Brooklyn, New York, and we'll have him on the air soon also. Folks, I'm smiling from ear to ear right now because we have Sicily on our station. And having said that, good morning, Queen. How are you, Miss Sicily?
Hi, good morning. I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, man. We're really excited. Ever since I came across your music, I was hoping that we would rate enough to have you call into our station. So, you know, it feels like my chest is out real big right now. You know what I mean? So thank you so much, Queen. Listen, we're going to get right into it. And I know this is a little broad-based question, but who is Sicily, Alexa?
So I am a musician and songwriter, vocalist from Washington, D.C., and my primary focus is on soul music, R&B, and jazz, and I pull a lot from my favorite 70s soul songs, and I think people hear that a lot in my music, and I'm really also focused a lot on lyrics. I pay attention a lot to how I tell a story and pulling people into my story.
Wow. You know, listening to your music, one could hear that you really focuses on lyrics, and that's kind of unique among young artists today, you know, and so we really appreciate, you know, your music and having you on. And you can make been compared to Denise Williams and Corinne Bailey-Ray. Well, I know a lot of artists don't like comparisons. How did it feel to be compared to a legend like Denise Williams, like, 'cause you love me, baby, and I just want to be free? I mean, like, that colored my childhood. And Corinne Bailey-Ray, of course, you know, folks, she's great too. But how did it feel being compared to them?
You know, it feels amazing. I'm not one to, you know, be mad at comparisons at all. I think it's really an honor to be compared to some of my favorite musicians. And when I first started performing around D.C., I would always sing Free by Denise Williams. And so I was really honored when someone wrote and said that, you know, I sound like Denise Williams. So I'm always honored. You know, it can be a little intimidating, especially on this new track. A lot of bloggers have said that it's very Minnie Riperton-esque, which is, you know, an intimidating comparison to live up to, but also very honored.
Yeah, I was going to add Minnie Riperton in case you forgot, because like she's her music from when she was at Rotary Connection to her solo projects with Stevie Wonder, she was amazing. Mm-hmm. Also, their vocals are very similar. And so how intimidating is that? Do you try and hit those notes, or does that just come natural?
Well, you know, I don't have the whistle register, which is what that upper register is called, that Minnie Riperton and Denise Williams and a few other people can do it too. I don't really have that whistle register. However, I think the tone of my voice and my phrasing and things like that are why I get that comparison. So I'm, like I said, a little scared by it, but I hope that when people see me, they are able to just accept me and love me for who I am as an artist.
Cool. And I picked the Minnie Riperton up almost immediately when I was listening. Now, on our station, we try and shy away from labels. We understand how that pigeonholes artists and really keeps them from being introduced to other genres or whatever. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned something called mid-century soul. And I was like, what is that? So can you describe that for me, for my own edification? Like, what is mid-century soul?
So I basically used that phrase to describe soul music from the 50s, 60s, 70s, basically what I grew up listening to via my parents' record collection. So people like Smokey Robinson, James Brown, Minnie Riperton, you know, these are the songs that I grew up hearing. So that's kind of what I'm pulling from a lot of the time in my own work.
You know, listening to your EP kind of answered the question to the other, however you describe music also, but I would like folks also to understand what you mean by reimagined folk music. And folk music is really essential to who we are also, but what do you mean when you say that, Cicely?
So when I describe my work as reimagined folk music, what I'm kind of referring to is taking certain elements of folk music, like, you know, the acoustic guitar and the storytelling, using, you know, different types of refrains and things like that, and introducing them into my own music, which is heavily influenced by soul and jazz. And so when I'm doing that, I really am thinking about people like Terry Collier, who is one of my favorite artists, who kind of is still under the radar, at least in the United States. I think he's bigger in Europe, but, you know, he passed a few years ago, unfortunately. But I think his music really is that perfect blend of soul, jazz, and folk. And so I often go back to him as a reference when I'm working on my own stuff.
And how important is telling a story when you write your lyrics and you create a song and compose a song? How important is, like, actually telling a story? Like, given today how, you know, I'm a little older and I look at music through that lens, and it seems like the art of storytelling and concept albums are going. But that's not what I take when I listen to your music. So how important is to tell a story?
I think it's the most important element, honestly. I mean, I'm a lyric person. I know some people can listen to a song 5 times and still not know what the lyrics are, but I hear the lyrics the first time I hear a song. It's really important to me. And so when I'm trying to write a song, the first thing I ask myself, I usually will get an idea, and then I ask myself, okay, how does this fit into the story? You know, what am I trying? And so I often do a lot of rewrites on lyrics.
Okay.
Sometimes it takes me, like my newest single, I wrote the first verse and chorus in 2011, you know. So, and it took a lot of years for it to develop and for me to figure out exactly what I wanted to say, because a lot of times you have to live it before you're able to write it, you know. So I think on this new project that I have coming out on May 4th, it's called Songs of Love and Freedom. And I really did try to pull from my own experiences of trying to find self-love, trying to find inner strength, trying to find hope, and going through different practices of healing and meditation and self-care. And so these are all the things that I pulled from, all the things I'm experiencing, trying to tell people, you know, who I am, about my life, who I am right now in this moment. So I definitely focus a lot on the story and telling the story. It's kind of my most important thing when I listen to my songs, I'm like, is it sounding good? Are people able to be pulled in by the story?
You know, I'm going to bring my program director on after this one question I have for you. But why I wanted to reach out to you, because you kind of grab what we're trying to do as a radio station. We call our station the Subtext First Minute of New Day Music and Culture, and also Concept Music, where most of our DJs, rather than just playing a song for 20 or 30 minutes playing music, we try and actually put out, capture what we go through. Like if I'm in New York, if I'm in L.A., I always keep headphones on and a notepad, and I try and capture what I'm seeing and then put it in a playlist on the station. And like I've said before, it doesn't come across literal, but I'm hoping that our audience grasps what it means to, you know, to be in L.A. for the first time or to walk in South Beach and just see. So, and that's why, your music resonated so much with us. But you just touched on something that a question I wanted to ask you. You know, you graduated from a very prestigious school, Swarthmore University. And I know that because we competed against them also. And your degree was in Black Studies and Political Science. How did that shape your music, you know, your discipline in college?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think mainly going to college really taught me how to think critically, and it helped to shape my worldview, and my worldview shapes my music. So what I mean by that is, you know, in my Black Studies classes, we read a lot of historical texts, and we read a lot of new ways to conceptualize the world that's not from a Eurocentric perspective, you know.
Wow. Can you say that one more time? Because you just hit me in my heart right there. Just say that one more time, Cicely.
Yeah, we read texts that taught us how to understand the world not from a Eurocentric perspective.
Okay.
And that, I think, that idea of pulling from history and also that idea of creating a new narrative or a fresh narrative that doesn't necessarily have to be attached to this or attached to that, but is, you know, coming out of something that feels like your own instead of trying to answer to what the expectations are from, you know, other people. So I think that also my political science classes just taught me how to understand that everything is political. And so I don't run from that in my music, even if it's a love song, you know.
Wow.
That is political in a way because I feel like personally that real love, true love is really a radical act, right?
Yes, because it is.
I mean, I could get real deep, but... Yeah. In essence, I feel like capitalism really forces us to try to hate ourselves, right? Because we have to hate ourselves in order to want to keep consuming. And capitalism is built on consumption and consumers and also on exploitation of those consumers and of those workers. So we have to hate ourselves to keep consuming. So if I write a song that gets someone to be vulnerable enough to question that self-hate, then that's political, right? Because I'm undermining capitalism in that moment. So I really do think about music as a political act, and I think it's really important that people be aware of what they're listening to because it stays in your psyche for so many years, even if you don't want it to, you know? So I really encourage people to be particular about what they listen to because it has such a powerful impact on everything about us, especially at the subconscious level. So, yeah.
You know, Marvin Gaye once said that, you know, music hits us on subconscious levels that we're not necessarily aware of. And if you listen to, you know, I joke with my friends all the time, if I turn on a traditional radio station, by 3 o'clock that afternoon, if an elephant walks by, I'm in love with it because you hear so many romanticized versions of love that you don't really understand what it is. So, man, I understand what you mean by that. So I'm bringing our station manager, Harold, on the line. He has a few questions for you. Do you mind, Cicely?
No, of course. Hi, Harold.
Okay, I'm bringing him on now.
Okay.
Hey, Harold, how are you, man? Good morning.
I'm doing wonderful and blessed. How are you, Cicely? How's everything?
I'm doing wonderful. Good morning.
I'm
good
doing
to talk with you.
Well, thank you, thank you. Listen, after the conversation you guys had, I just want to listen. I want you to continue the conversation. I was like, because you guys just dropped some knowledge, it's just unheard of, and I hope the audience can take from that. And we'll go back around to how lyrics hit your subconscious, and that's just too much. So I appreciate you for saying that. That's really deep, because you don't hear it. You don't hear people talking about that. That often, that what you put in there, what you put in your mind, exactly what's going to come out, and you can't stop it. So it's important what you say. But I want to go back. I want to say happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
Your birthday month in March. You know, I hope you had a great celebration and enjoyed it and continues
enjoy
it. That was March 4th for all you listeners out there. I won't say the year. I'm not allowed to say that, but make sure you let her know happy birthday. When you text her or contact her, you said, I read that you, some things that you read, I mean, that you wrote, that I was just reading, I was going through. And one of your goals this year was to accept things that you cannot change and things that are out of your control and learn to exist in a realm of the unknown. Now, those are your words. So can you just explain it so people can like try to grasp what that means and maybe put it into their life, because it is a good lesson.
Yeah, so thank you for reading my blog, first of all. I'm definitely a little bit of a control freak. And so I think the past year has taught me so much about getting out of that habit. I have a bad habit of when my life is feeling out of my control or when I don't feel like I'm being action-oriented or solution-oriented, I start to try to control the people around me, you know. And luckily I have a very loving husband who will call me out on this very lovingly and say,
okay,
babe, what's going on? You're trying to control me. You're trying to tell me what to
right,
do.
Right.
So what are you experiencing right now that make you feel like you have to do that, you know? And I think life puts us in a lot of situations where we don't know what's coming next. We can't predict the future, you know, because not everything is in our control. And I think that especially in the last year, I really just learned to live in that state of unknown and just be okay with it, knowing that you don't have to know exactly what's coming next. You do what you can, you know, and what you can do is so many things, you know. If you spend all your time focusing on the things that you can't control, then you really lose sight of all the innumerable things that you can control. So, that's what I meant by that.
Very nice. Okay. I kind of thought, but I wanted people to hear from your voice, because me reading it, your words, of course, you'll say it exactly the way you meant it. So I just want to go back in time just a little bit to you performed at Bethesda Blues and Jazz Club for the first time. Can you explain that experience and what took place there?
That was amazing. It's a really beautiful theater in Bethesda, Maryland, and it used to be a movie theater, one of those big cinema houses, and it still has kind of some of the grace and the architecture of that era, which was nice.
Okay.
And I did a Black History Month show there that was dedicated to D.C. So I'm originally from D.C., and every year I do a show that's dedicated to D.C. music and history. I did that at another theater called The Atlas this past fall. And when Black History Month came around, I decided to do something similar. And I did songs by Marvin Gaye. I did songs by Ruth Brown, who is from Virginia but got her start in D.C. Same with Pearl Bailey, who really from Virginia, but also got her start in D.C. I did songs by Roberta Flack, who went to Howard University and lived and worked in D.C. for many years. And I also was very honored to have my friend Kenny Wesley, who's an amazing vocalist, be a special guest on the show, and we did some duets together, and that was just so much fun. So overall, I just had an amazing night. I had so much fun on stage. The band was really killing, and I was so happy to be there.
Oh, nice. Now, was that the first time that you performed the song Pisces live?
No, you know, I've actually been performing that song live for years now. And it's kind of part of my process of then when I write something, I like to try it out live to see how it hits people, see if people respond to it. And also it helps me figure out how I might want to arrange it for the album. You know, if there's certain sections that feel like they need to be longer or shorter, or if they need to add more in certain places, figure out what tempo feels best. So I love to perform things live and kind of try them out.
Okay. Good. Now, you said the song, you wrote the song previously. Is there any background for the song or what it was about? Or
I actually started writing the song. When I was in college, I did study abroad in Ghana in West Africa. Mm. And I was there for about 5 months, and part of the time I was there, we took a trip to a region called the Volta region. It's really beautiful and lush, just lots of rivers, and it's just gorgeous. It's so green and fertile, and we hiked to this waterfall called Wheelie Falls, and we swam in the waterfall, and it was just such an amazing experience. It made me feel really alive and fresh. So I reflected on that moment of being in that waterfall, and that's where the first lyrics came from. It's from that experience.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
The first lyrics of the song are I've swam in waterfalls. and so that's where that came from. So
it makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, so it came out of that personal experience and of that moment, and then I just kind of built on it from there, that experience of feeling uncertain, but feeling alive and feeling like,
you know,
finding strength in nature and finding, because I really do believe that, like, you know, the universe is just like God, the universe is present in everybody and everything. So it's when you're in nature, you feel that especially. And the song is really about feeling that connection to nature, to God, to your ancestors, and kind of finding that strength from all of that.
All right. Very powerful. Very powerful. Now, you stated that your voice has gotten stronger over the last 2 years. Then you touched on it earlier. What does that mean? Is there more range or I don't
know.
Can you explain that to me in layman terms?
So the best way that I can describe it is when I hear something that I want to sing, I can sing it. And I can hear more options of what to sing. So if you're a singer, you know that the challenge is to be able to hear something interesting to sing, right? And then get your vocal cords to do that interesting thing. So I feel like over the past year and a half especially, I'm able to hear more interesting things to do vocally and then get my vocal cords to actually do those things. So, I've been really just loving every performance. I feel like my voice is getting stronger and stronger, and I'm just really happy about that.
Okay. Can I ask another question, Tracy? Okay. Go ahead.
Hey, go ahead, Harold.
I'm listening.
If Cecily will allow, you have to ask the Queen first.
Because I'm really enjoying this. Your explanation of how your voice becomes stronger, then I'm going to say it was a freeing spirit, which means if people don't know, you were invited by the U.S. Embassy in Colombia to perform at the Mompox Jazz Festival.
Mm-hmm.
My first question about that is, how were you notified? Did you get a phone call? Did they email you, text you?
Well, they actually contacted my guitar player, Zachary Cutler, who's like a brother to me, because he had previously toured in Colombia, and made friends with some people who work at the embassy. And so they called him and said, we want to invite an American jazz band to perform at the Mompox Jazz Festival. And he said, I know just a singer. And he called me. So that was really special that he invited me to be a part of it.
Oh, very nice. So that leads to the point where I asked you about your voice getting stronger. You said on your travels to Colombia, and once you were also there, the support you received spiritually and professionally gave you a freeing, I guess freeing, that would be F-R-E-E-I-N-G, freeing freedom and spirit, and that came out on stage. Can you explain that feeling or how that how it affected you as you performed that night, that evening?
Yeah, so anyone who's ever performed or anyone really in any job or capacity knows that when you feel supported, you're able to do so many more things. So in that night in particular, I really trusted the band. I knew that the band would hold it down, and so I didn't have to worry about that. I trusted the sound guys. They were really nice. They were professional. The sound check went wonderful. But I didn't have to worry about that, you know. It was like a beautiful professional stage. I knew that I wasn't going to trip or fall, you know. These are little things that when you're performing really can steal away your attention, you know.
Okay.
If you're worried about like, oh, let me avoid this area because my heel might get stuck there. Or, you know, let me make sure I cue the band on what's coming next. These are the type of things that pull you out of the, you know, giving the audience everything you can. And so that night in particular, I really felt supported. I knew that everyone was doing their job the way that they should and that I could do my job the way that I want to, you know. So that was a really fun, really fun experience. And it was an outdoor stage. It was thousands of people there. It was raining, and everybody was still out there just having a good time. So
having a good time.
Really just loved the experience, loved the Colombian people as well. They were wonderful. I barely speak Spanish, and they still roll with me. So it was awesome.
Okay, very nice. So, and you said that night that you found yourself, you came to realization, you really came and understood that you were more than capable. Capable of growing, capable of getting stronger, capable of, what were you capable of? If you had to answer that question, you found yourself more capable.
I think that, you know, you just always wonder how people are going to respond to you, you know? Like if what you're giving them is going to be exciting or if it's going to be enough for them, if it's going to pull them in. And just that night of getting in front of literally thousands of people who had never heard me perform before, didn't know who I was, had never heard any of my songs, and they loved it. They loved it. And so it just taught me that I'm capable of really, you know, captivating an audience and really telling my story even across language barriers.
I agree. Now, so my last point. I want you to explain to the audience, to the younger people, even people in their lives who, you know, myself, a little older, what the London experience did for you, traveling alone. Can you explain that so people can maybe learn from it? That I'll let you finish. You tell them about London.
Yeah. So a couple years ago, I found a really cheap ticket to London, and so I decided to go just by myself. And so I went for about 2 weeks. I just traveled by myself in London. I stayed in Brixton, which I love. Brixton reminds me so much of Brooklyn, New York. And, you know, stayed in the Airbnb. I didn't know anybody. I met up with a few friends of friends who are amazing people. I'm so glad that I got to meet them. And, but mostly I was just by myself. And after about 6 days, that got, like, really lonely. You know, time people are out and about in their day, in everywhere in the world, most of the times, and they're just in their phone all day, right? But I couldn't even escape into my phone because my phone didn't work. So one day I went to some museums, and I was wandering around and I went in a little bookshop and I picked up a few books that were like one pound each. And so I bought like five of them. And
okay.
I sat down, I opened one of them, and it was Letters to a Young Poet. And by this poet and writer named Rilke. And so the whole story, it's not really a story, it's literally letters that he wrote to a poet he met.
Okay.
Who was a young poet. And a lot of it is about how solitude is necessary to get to know yourself and tap into your creative spirit. And I realized by the second to last day I was there after reading this book that this time that I was so, you know, tired of being there by myself and, you know, wandering around in London,
right,
I realized
right.
that this is really precious time to be by myself and to get to know myself. And actually, one of the songs that's on my project, the last song on the project, is called Don't Hide the Sun. I wrote that
okay.
when I was in London. I was sitting in the park, and I had just finished reading the book, and I was contemplating how amazing it was to just be by myself and enjoy that
okay.
time and feel all those feelings that are so easy to run from when you have other people around or electronics to distract you, you know? But it was, really just,
right,
it was
right.
literally just me in the park, chilling in the grass, and I just didn't want to run from myself anymore, and I just enjoyed that space.
I wholeheartedly agree. And my quote, you have several quotes on your blog, Sicily Music, that you take from the book, but I want to ask you about this one, because this one hit me. It says, your doubts can become a good quality if you school them. Do you remember writing that?
Mm-hmm.
From the book?
Mm-hmm.
The doubts, that's just powerful. It's such a short sentence, but it's so powerful. If you sit there and just read it and look at it, that if you take the doubts that you have in your life, and I'm telling you, I was reading your blog, and it was just blowing me away. It was absolutely blowing me away. The words that you were writing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to read it. And that particular quote is, that's a lesson I learned from a friend of mine years ago who actually co-wrote the song Pisces. His name is John. His
okay.
stage name is Diggs Duke. And he taught me a lot of things. And one thing he taught me is that if you are doubting yourself, it's for a reason, right? So
okay.
there's, of course, fear that's involved in that. And so you need to be
right.
able to meditate on the fear and see where the fear is coming from and address that. But a lot of times that doubt could be coming from just being ill-prepared, right? So what do you need
right.
to work
that's
on
true.
In order
okay.
to become better so that you don't have to be afraid anymore, right? So
right.
I feel like also when I talk about my voice getting stronger, that's kind of what I meant, is that I've gotten to a
okay.
point now where I don't feel afraid of performing or anything because I know I can do what I want to do, you know? So,
right.
yeah, you definitely have
yep.
to you have to learn your doubts. You have to understand the source of them, and you have to school them. Yeah.
I got it. So what you're saying, in essence, is the last 2 years that you've gone through is don't be afraid of change.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
finding out who you are, and don't be afraid of change, because that change can make you better. Although
yeah.
it's change, you know, most people fear change, but you have
and
embraced
I'm one of those
it
people.
In a way that makes you better. Yeah, you're. Well, listen, I think we all are, but I think you've grasped it and taken it to a level where that change is now a good thing for you, because you can see the things that you need to change or work on to make you a better artist, and it definitely comes out in your EP and the song Pisces you just released, and I'm looking forward to May 4th when you release. So I'm going to ask you about two more quotes, one more
mm-hmm.
thing. You have to tell me about this song, You Are. I tell you what, this song, if our listening audience, you have to, one, buy the EP before our next project comes out and listen to the song, You Are. Hey, it's just absolutely amazing. Can you, any background to it or... Who you're
yeah, you know,
to,
it's
what
funny.
You're talking about?
Yeah, thank you for asking about that song. That's one of my favorites to perform live.
Okay.
That song, actually, I wrote while I was in Ghana. So I sat down with a friend of mine. I had just really gotten into trying to take songwriting seriously because I had decided, okay, I'm getting my degree in political science, but I know I want to do music, so let me try to take the songwriting thing more seriously. And I met a friend of mine down there. His name is Junior. He's originally from Senegal. He's also studying abroad in Ghana at the time. And he had just learned to play guitar. And so we sat down and I said, okay, let's try to write something. And he just played some ideas. And instead of playing these arpeggiated chords, and I said, wait, I like that. Keep playing that. And I just started writing. I started writing, and I wrote the first verse and the chorus. And then maybe a few weeks later, the hostel that I was staying in, the dorm, they had a talent show. And so they were like, you guys should perform the song you wrote. And I said, well, we didn't finish it yet. And they're like, well, finish it. And so literally I went in the room and I wrote the second verse in like 5 minutes. And I was like, okay. Let's do it. And so that's where the song came from.
Man.
It's funny because I think the lyrics, when I wrote them, I didn't really have anyone in mind. The song was about, like, that one person that always keeps you motivated, keeps you focused, picks you up when you're falling down, you know. And the way I wrote it, it's about, like, a romantic love. And at the time, I didn't really have that person, you know. I didn't know who I was writing about.
Right.
But, I mean, nowadays when I sing it, I definitely think about my husband.
Oh, definitely, because your subconscious found exactly what you were singing about and what you wrote about.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely touching, that song, and I would suggest everybody take a listen to it. And I'm going to say this last thing, and then Tracy, I'm going to let you go, and you can tell us what's going on in D.C. musically, because somebody told us a few weeks ago things are really happening in Detroit. So I want to know what's going on in Washington, D.C., if everybody's on the rise, because out of struggle comes rise. Comes greatness out of struggle. And I think we're seeing that in music. So I'm going to read this to you, and you explain it. See if you've heard this before. I have the power to create everything I desire. I take responsibility for that power, and I freely and intentionally choose to use my power to create everything I desire.
Yes. That is an affirmation that I wrote in December in L.A., and I hiked up the mountain. I think it was like Baldwin Hills. I guess it's not a mountain, but it felt like a mountain. It was so many steps.
Right.
And I was at the top, and I was looking out. You could see the whole city. You could see the hills, see the ocean. And in that moment, I could clearly see everything that I wanted to create in my life. I could clearly see it. Like, I could almost touch it. It felt more real than ever. And in that moment, I came up with that affirmation as a reminder to myself that I feel like sometimes when we think about what we want to do in the world, we just feel overwhelmed by it. And so I wanted to have that affirmation. And it's funny because I just wrote that yesterday again in my journal as a reminder to myself.
Very nice.
That
very nice.
That I have so much power in me, and that the only way to use it is to take responsibility for it and not to be afraid of that responsibility. So, yeah, thank you for reading my blog so thoroughly. I really appreciate that because I really put a lot of myself on there.
It was definitely my pleasure, and it gave me insight, and I think the audience should also, our listeners, take a moment to go through that and listen, because I think, you know, we've done some interviews here at Is That Jazz Radio over last month or so, and every artist, successful artist that's on the rise has done a few things, and you've also accomplished them all. You've been patient. If you wrote a song in 2011 and you're just releasing it, you just felt it was ready. So timing is everything, but also be patient in your craft. It's just amazing. So it's my pleasure talking with you, Cicely, and I look forward to seeing you live, and I look forward to your next release date. May 4th.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Harold. I appreciate you for all the amazing questions. And
well, folks, we're going to take a brief break, and actually we're going to play You Are and another tune with a favorite MC that I know called Tabby Boney, and we'll be right back with our conversation with Cicely. Please hold on. We're back on the air with Cicely, my program director, Harold. And Cicely, Harold touched on it a little bit. We had spoken with Idea from Detroit, and she was explaining how that city's coming back and how the artists are being supported. And one thing Harold and I are going to do this summer is, instead of heading to New York like we have been in the past, we're also going to take and go down to D.C. and explore that scene. So how is D.C. in terms of the artist support and just music that's not really heard on traditional radio? Like, how is it in D.C. right now?
Yeah, you know, it's beautiful, and I feel like D.C. has always had a really strong underground scene when it comes to jazz and to R&B and soul music. And even going further into punk music, folk, D.C. really has a strong scene in almost any genre you can think of, hip-hop. And I'm really excited because I feel like we're going through a little bit of a renaissance. Like, I know so many amazing artists who are now getting ready to release projects or just release projects and are kind of starting to push the boundaries outside of just the DMV area. And I'll shout out a couple of them. I mean, there's an artist, producer, singer, songwriter team called April and Vista. They just went on tour with Goldlink, who is also from D.C., who was just nominated for a Grammy for his album. They're amazing. Michael Robinson is a really amazing soul singer who also sings backup for Bilal. He's been doing that for years. He's crazy good. I mean, there's just so many people who are coming out of the D.C. scene, and I think there's a lot more venues now, too, that are enabling us to have places to, you know, get up with people and to link with new audiences and new fans. And so I want to give a special shout out to all the promoters and all the venue owners and all the programmers who enable us artists to have these places to really express ourselves and to commune and get to know each other. There are lots of amazing jam sessions that are happening now. Jazz jam sessions, R&B jam sessions. So it's just a cool time to be here. And I had always considered leaving. You know, I'm born and raised in D.C. and Maryland. So, you know, you kind of want to go away from home. You feel like that's the next step, right? But I'm really happy to be in D.C. and to be doing what I'm doing in the city.
That's great. One young man that I've met, and we hope to have him real soon on the station, is Odyssey, and he's from the area too. And we've talked, Amir and I have talked a number of times, and I love his music. But during the break when we played your music, of course we played You Are and Heaven in Your Eyes with Tabby Boney. How was it working with that brother?
Yeah, he's such a nice dude. And it's funny, you know, when we recorded that song, it was a while ago, it was in like 2013, and I had never met him in person because he had been back and forth between D.C. and L.A., and I knew a lot of people that knew him personally, but I hadn't met him. And my brother was on Twitter, and he said, yeah, I saw Teddy Bonet, said he's doing features on Twitter to hit him up. And so I did. I sent him an email. I said, here's the song. And he said, I really love this joint. He sent me back, like, one take. And I was like, yo, this is fire. And it was so good. And it wasn't until, like, a year after that that I actually met him, that I ran into him in D.C., like, at a concert. And he gave me a big hug. And it was just so nice. That was really nice. And I actually ran into him again at a performance just a few weeks ago. And he was performing some new songs he had coming out in April that are so, so good. Very, because, you know, his family's from Togo, from West Africa. And his new stuff definitely has that Afrobeat vibe and feel. So he has some great stuff coming out, too. So definitely look out for his new work.
Very nice. Very nice.
Oh, Okay, Harold, do you have one more question before our last question we asked for Cicely?
I do. I didn't see this, so my question would be, when did you first realize that you wanted to sing? How old were you, if I can ask that question? Where did you get your start at?
When I was in middle school is when I really started singing. I was very afraid to sing in front of other people. My music classes in school, they always had us sing together. Every day we'd sing in a group, and I remember this girl turned to me, and they used to tell me, Cece, and I did her say, Cece, you have such a pretty voice. And I was really embarrassed because I didn't know anybody listening to me.
Okay.
I think that kind of, I always liked the way that it felt to sing. Like, it's a very healing practice, all the vibrations and all that. I used to sing myself a lot in my room, but I would get really nervous if anyone was listening. So I think, I don't know what moved me to do it, but I saw a flyer that said voice lessons were being taught at my local arts center, and I asked my mom if I could take voice lessons. I was 12, and she said, well, can you sing? You know?
Right.
You didn't want to pay for the voice lessons if I couldn't sing, which, for the record, I think is unfair. If I said I want to take piano, she wouldn't be like, well, can you play piano? But, you know, whatever.
Right. Understood. I said to her,
I can sing. She said, well, sing something then. And I said, okay, give me a minute. And I went in my room, and I tried to prepare, figure out what I was going to sing. And I forgot what I sang. Okay. But she told me a year ago, she was like, you know, you came out and sang the Black National Anthem?
Hell yeah. All right.
So I went out and I sang Lift Every Voice and Sing.
I knew it really well
from church and, you know, a lot
That's
of
right.
different places. We used to sing it all the time.
Okay.
And she said, yeah, you have a nice voice. I'll pay for your voice lessons. And it started there.
Okay.
It started there.
Very
nice. Practical voice lessons for like 10 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Beautiful story. That was my last one.
Okay, Cicely, we ask all of our guests to our station to respond to one, and we give out one word, and then the first word that comes to mind to say it and then to expand on it. For you, colonization.
Oh, God. I don't know. The only word I can think of is anger.
Right.
And I say anger because, you know, like that Frank Fanon book, and he talks about how, you know, the oppressor, he colonized the land and the resources, and that the worst thing he colonized was the mind, so the oppressed, right? And I feel like that's what we're still breaking out of in lots of little ways. And I think that's one thing I realized in college the most is all the ways that your mind has been colonized to privilege or think of superior things that come from Europe. And so when I think of colonization, I just get angry because it forced us into the situation we're in now where we have to constantly reteach ourselves how to value things that come from Black and brown people. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That would be my reaction.
Well, I wanted to share something with you, and this is just based on a very superficial observation, but last year, Cicely, it came across to me, and I don't remember how, but it was a festival in New York called the Curly Girl Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens every summer in Prospect Park in Brooklyn. And Cicely,
mm-hmm.
when I tell you it was one of the most transformational experiences I ever going through, oh, my goodness. And I'm going to send you the information. And it was about maybe 15,000 sisters that all got together, queens as they were, to celebrate everything natural about them. And in media, we see so many adverse portrayals of our women, of our queens, but to see them sharing love of all ages. So that's something I want to, definitely information I want to get across to you, and if you're in the country, country or not touring, is something I would invite you to attend. And that was just something I was just, you know, I said I have to mention it to her. And I didn't necessarily want to do it on the air, but I'm trying to plug their event also.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm aware. I've been meaning to go for the past 2 years, and every year I haven't made it yet. But I'm going to try to make it this year. Thank you for the reminder.
I just remember getting on the subway of Midtown, and you guys had taken over the platform. And so I didn't necessarily know where Prospect Park was in Brooklyn. And so when I got off, you know, the train, of course I'm following, and I asked one sister, I call you guys queens, and that might be superficial also, based on what Idea and Jessica Care Moore has told me. But
right.
I just asked the queen, like, where to go? And she was like, follow the Afros. And I just want to share with you. Like,
I love that. I love that.
It was a beautiful day, right? And, you know, of course it was in July, but the fragrance from the natural, you know, when you take care of your hair naturally and the different oils, it puts off a beautiful scent. And Sicily, it had confused the honeybees. So they were hovering right over our head where they thought a flower garden just emerged out of nowhere. And just the scene, I could go on and on, but I definitely, since you heard about it, if you're in the area, like, oh, my goodness. And it wasn't anything, like, too formal a plan. Just we got together in the park, and it was beautiful. So I wanted to give you an opportunity. Of course, we're going to have your music on our website and how to connect with you. And we're going to feature all the music we have available to you this Sunday when this interview airs. But how can folks reach you, come see you when your next performance, or buy this new release coming out?
Yes. First of all, thank you guys so much. This is one of my favorite interviews that I've ever done. I feel like I really got to talk about my story and my worldview, and I really appreciate that. So everyone can find me.
Yep, thank you.
And my music and my blog and all of that at cecilymusic.com. That's CECILYMUSIC.com. And you can find me on Instagram and on Twitter at Cecily Alexa. And I post often on Instagram, so follow me there, and you can kind of follow the progress through the album and all that. We just started mixing like 2 days ago, so I'm really excited.
Okay.
Very nice.
And Harold, you know, the Zoe of Is That Jazz Radio? essentially, we named Harold after our interview with Idea. We both, like, that's Zoe right there, you know, the musician or producer Zoe. So, Harold, do you have a parting statement you'd like to make for our audience?
No, I just want to say thank you for the insight. Thank you for your music. It's just beautiful. And nothing but best wishes in the future, especially on May 4th and going forward.
Thank you so much.
Well, audience, we're going to let go. But, Sicily, can you stay on the line, and you as well, Harold? But, again, thank you, Sicily, so much, okay?
Thank you.
But stay on the line. All right.